Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And we're talking today to Don McPherson. He is the president of Modern Survey. Don, this is your second time on the show. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
You know, last time you were on with Ryan Estes, and you guys were coming up to the New England Strategic Conference, and we rode out the hurricane together.
We did. It was a phenomenal conference. The hotel was amazing. The speakers were phenomenal. It was very, very well organized. I do about 15 to 20 conferences a year, and that was probably one of the top one or two that I went to. It was just a really, really well done.
Well, Bud Bernstein and Heather Bassett and that group, they are a sponsor of the show, Northern New England Law Publishers. They're a great sponsor here at the HR Power Hour, and they put on fantastic conferences.
They do. Great content, great venue. They were very accessible. It was very, very well done. The keynotes were phenomenal, and hopefully this year I'll be one of the keynotes.
Well,
I'm lobbying for that. Anyway.
I'm sure you are. And, you know, you did a great job up there. And one of the things we had spoken about at the time was that we'd like to get you back on the show. And so I really do appreciate that you took the time today to do that.
No problem.
We have a number of topics that we're going to talk about today. So for all the listeners out there, we're going to go kind of a topic per section, because I think there's some really good stuff here, which is really valuable to HR professionals and business leaders. So let's start with topic one. So we're going to be talking about peak performance. What is peak performance?
Well, David, as you know, I am president of Modern Survey, and one of the things that we do at Modern Survey is measure employee opinions. And one of the things that we measure is organizational health, for lack of a better term, or organizational performance. And when we talk about peak performance, not only at an individual employee level or at an organizational level, we think of peak performance in three different categories, or three things are required for peak performance to be possible. The first thing is employee engagement. If you don't have a highly engaged workforce, it's very difficult for that organization to reach its performance goals. So engagement is critical, but engagement alone is not enough. You have to have employees who have the capabilities to do the job. And when I say capabilities, I mean tools and resources, training, employees who are involved in their decision, an appropriate level of teamwork, and finally a performance management system that helps employees when they might get off track or gives them feedback when they're doing a great job. So you have engaged employees, and you have employees with the capabilities to do their job. The final piece is direction. So that we include things like goal clarity, customer focus, quality focus, management communication, and a very, very key element is values. And this is one of the things that I talk about when I'm speaking. Without values, organizational values that are known and understood, employee engagement is almost impossible to achieve. When all three of these things come together, engaged employees who have the capabilities, resources, and the direction to do the job, your organization has the potential to peak perform.
Now, when we're talking about peak performance, this whole process really starts at the top, correct? I mean, if you don't have buy-in from the C-suite level or the business owner or the senior leadership team, I mean, it's just dead in the water.
Absolutely. In fact, one of the things that has been very interesting as we've studied employee engagement in the U.S. is how the drivers of engagement have shifted. So pre-recession, 2007, 2008, we found that the top drivers were things like recognition and personal accomplishment, career development, things delivered by the direct manager. But post-recession, to your point, we have found that the top driver has either been belief in the future of the organization or belief in senior leadership. And so if senior leadership, the C-suite, is not involved in engaging employees and setting the direction and living the values of the organization and making sure that the employees have the tools and resources to do the job and enough people to get the job done, forget about it. It's not going to be achieved, and your organization is going to lose.
We're talking about engagement. Let's set the stage here. What is the current state of employee engagement in the U.S. based upon the survey results you have and maybe other national surveys that are out there? What are you seeing in terms of that employee engagement in the U.S.?
We have been measuring at Modern Survey employee engagement since 2007. So twice annually, we go out and get a panel sample of U.S. workers to respond to our engagement survey. And we publish reports, and people can get them on modernsurvey.com. We publish these reports twice annually. The latest one that we published was done in October of 2012. We gathered the results late September, published the report in October. And what we found is that 13% of the U.S. is fully engaged.
That's pretty low.
Very low. It's very low. Another 22% are moderately engaged. What that leaves us is with 65% of our workforce either underengaged or disengaged. So that's nearly two-thirds. And to set some context, 65% is a very, very high number, and it's very unfortunate. The lowest we've seen that number is at 59%. The highest we've seen was a year ago, actually fall of 2011, at 70%. So we're still so high in terms of the number of underengaged and disengaged employees in our workforce, and we've got a lot to do. There's just so much our organizations need to do in order to start demanding that employees bring their best to work every day, to make sure our managers understand what engagement is and how they can engage their people, and getting the C-suite, as you mentioned earlier, involved and helping people understand what the future of the organization is and building trust with their employees. So unfortunately, the state of engagement is what I would say very pathetic right now.
Well, it's interesting. One of the things that, as you know, we do is recruiting. And there are plenty of surveys out there that talk about the fact that we are at a point where a large percentage of the population is looking or ready to jump at a moment's notice. And you can attribute that to a million factors. But engagement is certainly one of the key areas in terms of being able to hold and retain great talent. And whether people want to admit it or not, there is a talent war for really good talent. And there always will be. I mean, I always chuckle sometimes when people say that, the talent war is just happening now. No, there's always been a talent war for exceptionally good talent. This is incredibly relevant for companies that want to keep and maintain great talent.
No question about that. And I'll look at both sides of it. First, I'm going to start with the disengaged. We actually asked people if they were actively looking for a job. So it was a question that we posed about a year ago. And we found that among the disengaged employees, only 46% of them were actively looking for a job. And so that might sound like a lot, but these are your most dissatisfied, disenfranchised people. The people who come in on a daily basis and do the base minimum to get by and are miserable on a day-to-day basis, fewer than half of them are looking to leave their organizations. So what that should tell you as an HR professional or as a leader is that you need to do a better job of removing these people from your organization or finding an exit strategy for them, because it's going to be very difficult to re-engage them. So that's the disengaged folks. But your high performers and your high potentials, I had talked about the most important driver, the strongest driver being belief in the future of the organization or belief in senior leadership. That's for most employees, but not for your high performers and not for your high potentials. So if you're a leader out there and you have high performers on your team, you need to make sure you give them the career development opportunities that they need. Because those folks in any economy have opportunities to work elsewhere. And if you're not giving them the learning and development opportunities they need, and of course, fair pay, you are at risk of losing them, and your organization suffers greatly when you lose high performers and high potentials.
This comes down to communication, doesn't it? When you really think about the fact that senior leadership, visionaries, CEOs, SVPs or VPs that are trying to set the pace and vision of an organization to engage the employee into believing that they have a future, this really comes to how they communicate. First, acknowledging, yes, there is an issue, we don't have the engagement, and then figuring out the best communication strategy to re-engage those people. It really doesn't cost a lot, does it?
No, it doesn't have to. The one thing that I will say about communication, and I completely agree, engagement is primarily a function of how well we communicate. Because whether or not our organization is thriving, if you don't communicate, people are always going to assume that the organization is doing worse than it actually is. And if your organization is struggling, if the future isn't as bright as you'd like, by being candid and letting people know what the organization outlook looks like, you can get them involved to solve the problem. And that's very, very powerful. But leaders need to communicate. Direct managers need to communicate very frequently. They need to communicate post-survey. So if they're doing a survey, they can't just do activities and expect that people are going to link what they've done and the actions that they've taken to the survey. So, they need to be very explicit around what they've done and that employees contributed to getting that done. The other thing that I wanted to mention is just the barriers that are prevalent around communication. So, for example, with so many remote workers, getting the message out, even though we have email, we have all sorts of social media and things of that nature, it's very difficult to communicate to people and make sure that the message is getting across very clearly. Rewind 20 years ago or 30 years ago when most of us worked in an office or a setting where our CEO was around, it was far easier for that individual to communicate to people. So, just the nature of the workplace is making communication much, much more difficult. And, savvy leaders understand that, and they figure out ways in order to get the message across to them.
No, you're absolutely correct. I think about the fact that back when I had 80, 90 locations to talk to, how you communicate via phone versus, now today you might Skype and be able to see them. It does change the way that you can understand, because communication is not just verbal. There's, nonverbal. And when you take away the nonverbal ability to just look at what it is that you're saying or the tone of inflection, and now you can see their face and you can do that, that just increases the ability for it to get clearer understanding from that communication standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. I do a lot of international travel, and I speak a couple of different languages, but a lot of times I'm going to places where I don't speak the language, and somehow we're able to communicate with one another, even though I can't communicate in words. And, so much of the nonverbal, the tone inflection and things of that nature are lost when we're communicating only by email or by social media. And that's very unfortunate, because when you think about inciting engagement and making people passionate, it's very difficult to do with the written word. Whereas if somebody is speaking and they can draw people in with their message and hold people's attention in the palm of their hands and tell stories, that's very, very powerful, and it's becoming more and more difficult to communicate in that manner.
Absolutely. We talked about the engagement of the senior leaders in the process and ensuring that they're in line to make this happen. Ultimately, who's responsible for engagement? Senior leaders, the direct managers, or how about the employees themselves? Is it one, or is it a combination of them all?
There's a lot of debate around this subject. So a company like Gallup, which made engagement very popular in the late 90s and through the beginning part of the 21st century, they said engagement is all about the manager. So the manager delivers engagement, and that's true to a certain extent. We're proving with our research that senior leaders are very, very important in the equation as well. And then there are a number of people who are talking about the employee, and it's all about accountability, and employees choose to either bring their best or not bring their best. We did some research the last time we did our survey in the fall. First, we asked if people were familiar with the concept of employee engagement. Those people who said they were, we asked them whose responsibility it was. 15% said it's the senior leader's responsibility. 29% had said it was direct managers. 17% said it was their responsibility, the employee himself or herself. And the remaining 39% said it's all three equally. And I was very excited by that because that's what we say. You know, the organization, the senior leaders, they're responsible for certain elements of engagement. They set the foundation. Direct managers, to a certain extent, deliver. They recognize their employees. They help them develop. They fill them with a sense of personal accomplishment. And ultimately, the employee gets to choose. Do I bring my best to work today, or don't I bring my best? And so all three constituents, or all three parties, contribute to it, and I think it's about an equal share. And so I was very pleased that 39% said, yeah, it's all three equally. And that's what I would say is the appropriate equation for that.
No, that's great. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and you are listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB. Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you frustrated with medical care today? Does it make you angry that your doctor spends more time looking at the computer screen than at you? Does it seem like your doctor is out the door in 5 minutes? There is a better alternative. At Champy Family Practice, Dr. Michael Champy and his dedicated staff make taking care of patients their priority. They are a cash-friendly direct pay practice, which is the perfect option for people with no insurance, high deductibles, and health savings accounts. Unlike other practices, they post their prices in the office and even online. Get modern medical care delivered the old-fashioned way. For more information, call ChampyFamilyPractice.com. That's C-I-A-M-P-I. Or call 774-1222. Champy Family Practice is located at 380 Lincoln Street in South Portland. Champy Family Practice. Continuing a tradition of medical excellence in Greater Portland since 1959.
And we are back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. All right, Don McPherson is with us. Don, again, thank you for being on the show.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, we talked a little bit about peak performance and employee engagement. I guess a topic that we'd ask about now is, what are the best practices for actually measuring employee engagement? Let's start the process here.
Well, one of the things that I'm often asked is, how big does an organization have to be in order to measure engagement? And among our clients at Modern Survey, we've got organizations as small as 100 employees that measure engagement, and organizations that are tens of thousands of employees. I think when you get to the size of maybe 50 employees, it becomes cost prohibitive to be measuring engagement. I think you could still get value out of doing it, but there are some cost barriers to it. So generally speaking, we say, you know, 100 employees, you can get huge benefits when you get to about 1,000 employees. And so that's where most of our clients are, is at about 1,000 employees and above. So that's the size element. Another question I'm often asked is, with what frequency should organizations be measuring engagement? And there's been some research that's been done by a competitor of ours, actually. They looked at companies that measured engagement every 3 years, and they found that those organizations got very little change, or there was very little difference between measurement periods in the results. So not a lot of positive change. Then they looked at the organizations that did it every 2 years, and there was some positive change, but still not a great deal. Then they looked at the clients that are doing it every year, and they found that those organizations had the greatest changes, and many of them very significant changes. And what they found is that when you're measuring annually, it stays top of mind with managers and senior leaders, and employees just understand it as a way of doing business. So when the survey ends, you start getting reports, you start talking to employees about engagement, you start creating action plans and having focus groups, and after a few months, you're prepping to start the survey for the following year. And so it just becomes a way of doing business. And so a best practice is to measure every year. And I liken it to healthy organizations or healthy people. A healthy person, regardless of whether he's feeling well or she's feeling not so well, goes in and gets a physical every year. And that's the same thing with healthy organizations. They don't wait until they're sick in order to measure how employees are feeling. So that's an important best practice.
When we're talking about engagement in terms of, you know, the best practices for measuring it, can you over-measure? Can you ask too many questions? I mean, how do you get a feel for what it is you're trying to actually, you know, determine with these measurements? Because as we all know, you can have a question worded in a way that can get you almost any answer you want in statistics. So how do you make sure you're getting it exactly right? And is it always the first time right, or can you tweak later? Talk a little bit about that.
There are a couple of questions in there. First, I'll address the validation of the survey questions. So we measure engagement and employee opinions in a wide variety in a host of different industries. So we might do some manufacturing surveys, healthcare, financial services, nonprofit, maybe some government, all sorts of different industries. And what we try to do is have very simple questions that can be read at an eighth grade reading level. Because sometimes, you know, in different environments, you might have people who don't have college education. So you want the employees to be interpreting the question in the same way. That's why you can't have very complex questions that are open for interpretation. I'll give you a really good example of a question that we might ask. The company treats employees well. Now, it's open for interpretation. You know, I might interpret what treating employees well is differently than you, but for the most part, people are going to understand that question and be able to answer that question without a whole lot of discussion or debate. So asking the questions in a very simple manner is important. The second part of your question was the length of the survey or survey fatigue, and we typically advise clients to ask no more than 60 questions on a survey. Our standard instrument is 45 questions. It measures engagement, it measures capabilities, and it measures direction. You can complete it online in about 8 minutes, via paper maybe 10 to 12 minutes. It's very simple. Then you get into the frequency of surveying. You know, we've had some clients that will do a census survey to all employees asking the 45 questions, and then on a quarterly basis, they'll ask about a third of their employees, maybe 10 to 15 or 20 questions, just to get a pulse of how well their action planning is going. If you're surveying more than that, with greater frequency than that, you're going to run into survey fatigue.
One of the questions that always comes up when I talk to employees that do these surveys
And they maybe they're doing it for best places to work, or they're doing it for a survey organization to determine engagement. Is, you know, we do them, we look at them, and sometimes I'm not sure what happens to that information. Is it incumbent upon the employer to really explain exactly the process and how it's going to be used prior to taking the survey?
That's helpful. And so one of the things that we advise clients to do is have the CEO or the executive sponsor of the survey, and typically we ask the client to make it the CEO, but have that CEO send out a communication maybe 4 to 6 weeks prior to the survey, saying this is what we're doing, this is how we'll use the results, this is what you can expect on the back end. And then have the CEO send out another communication about 2 weeks before the survey. And then finally, employees will get the survey, and a lot of times that invitation comes from the CEO or under the CEO's name. Again, explaining why we're doing this, who's participating, what's going to be done with the data. And then when the survey results are in, very quickly communicate and thank employees for participating and map out a plan for what communication is going to look like in the coming months. And it's very simple. Organizations should be doing these things on a monthly basis. Tell employees what they said. Tell employees what you did over the last month. Tell them what you're going to be doing over the next month. And let them know when they can expect their next update. If you do that on a monthly basis, employees have to be living under a rock not to understand what sorts of actions have taken place. And just going through the process of that monthly communication will raise the credibility of the senior leadership team in the eyes of employees.
No, I fully agree. And I think that it is important that companies and HR professionals understand that, yes, it may be time-consuming, but it is well worth getting the data and the information so that you can truly see where you're at and how you can engage your employee, your workforce. And it just has such a big impact on productivity and retention, and I think that's so important. Don, you know, we've talked a little bit about peak performance using employee engagement and surveys to do so. We've talked a little bit about what best practices are for measuring employment engagement. So let's talk about how this engagement can be associated with other metrics in the organizations. What do you mean by that?
Well, the first thing is people want to know what the return on investment is for engagement. And what we promise is that when you have engaged employees, fully engaged and moderately engaged employees, they're going to be much more likely to reach their performance goals. And so there's been all sorts of research that links engagement to employee performance and employee performance to customer satisfaction and customer loyalty. But one of the very, very simple things that organizations can do is look at how engaged an employee is and how they're performing. And if you look at those metrics or those ratings over time, you will see that as engagement rises, the performance of the employee or employees will rise as well. Now, when we're working with a client, we don't go and give them exactly what the engagement levels of each of their employees are, but we can look at that information in aggregate. And one very powerful thing is if a client can give us the performance data as a demographic for all of their employees, we can segment, you know, here are your top performing employees and this is their engagement level. Here are your secondary performing employees and here are your bottom performing employees. And we can look at the relationship between performance and engagement. And that can be very, very powerful. Another thing that organizations should be doing is identifying who their high potentials are. and looking at engagement levels there, because this is a very, very important population. If you can assign a demographic to your employees and look at who your high potentials are, we can segment that and look at are they appropriately engaged, or are there some flight risks in there? And then we can help the client understand what they should be doing to engage, re-engage their high potentials and their high performers. So that's one of the linkages or associations that is very common with our clients, is linking engagement to potential and to performance levels of employees.
Well, certainly the C-suite, especially CFOs, for example, will say, we're going to spend X number of dollars. What can we expect from a monetary return for this? That's very common and actually very appropriate in terms of what they are looking at as the bottom line of an organization. Cash is at a premium today, and companies need to know that what they're going to be doing is going to truly make a difference and impact that bottom line result at the end of the day. How do you look at that from the standpoint of saying, okay, we can't necessarily give you what the metrics will be, but how do you talk to them about what it is that they'll see as a tangible result?
Well, there are some linkage research that we can do that can associate employee engagement to employee performance and customer satisfaction and customer loyalty, and then financial performance. It works really well in a retail environment or a retail banking environment. And so there's actually a retailer, a nationally known retailer, that has proven that if they raise employee satisfaction 1 point in their store, that will equate to $100,000 in additional profit for that store. So that's very, very powerful for that organization. And they were able to track that by linking engagement with customer satisfaction and ultimately financial performance in the store. Not every organization has that capability, because it's very difficult to look at engagement and the financial performance, you know, because it might be a very large organization, or there might be very different business units. But in a retail environment, that can be proved very easily if you're measuring the same thing over a period of years.
When organizations are looking at the relationship between engagement and maybe onboarding effectiveness, especially when you're hiring a new employee, can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yes. So one of the things that we did last year was spend a lot of time understanding how well organizations onboarded their employees. So we hosted a number of roundtables, and we had between 40 and 50 heads of human resources from organizations of all sizes participate in these roundtables, from 100-person organizations, and I think the biggest was about 150,000-person organizations. And what we found is that every single organization had onboarding problems. Now, among these problems,
I'm sorry,
I'm
just chuckling, because that is so true. We see that in all the organizations. They struggle in this area, don't they?
They do, and one of the big problems is responsibility. So, a manager thinks, well, onboarding, that they equate that to new employee orientation. And they think, well, human resources has that covered, and onboarding lasts a week. But in truth, onboarding lasts about 90 days to a year, depending on the job. And it may never end. I mean, some very complex organizations and jobs, it may last 2, 3, 4, 5 years, you know, getting them up to speed and getting them trained in all of the things that they're going to be doing. But for the way we look at it is, the first 90 days is what's most critical. And what we found is that every organization had problems, but the problems were different. So some organizations had problems with the manager even being present when the new employee started. Others had problems with tools and resources being available. And so you can imagine that the larger the organization, the more challenges they might have around tools and resources and things like that. There was one person who said, I was a new employee, and my team was meeting. I showed up at 8 o'clock. My team was meeting on the first day of my employment, and I sat in the lobby from 8 o'clock until 10 o'clock in the morning while they met. They didn't invite me in. I just sat in the lobby. So you can imagine how that person would feel about that organization. That's not a very good impression. And so when we onboard our employees poorly, we're sapping their ability to be engaged. And I talk to people about this frequently. People are not engaged when they're a new employee. They're enthusiastic. And that enthusiasm can wane very quickly if they're disrespected, if they're not welcomed properly, if they're not being trained properly. And so one thing that's very important to look at is, how effectively are your employees being onboarded? And that's one of the things that we measure, and it's a very critical measure.
No, it really is. It really is.
And then we associate that onboarding effectiveness with engagement. So we can prove to the organization that when you're onboarding your employees effectively, well, look at their engagement level, you know, 6 months down the line or a year down the line or whenever that engagement survey is occurring. And so that's what we think about when we're looking at linking onboarding effectiveness with engagement, that very, very critical early period measurement. And we typically recommend that employees are measured at 7 days. So how are they, what was their first impression, then at 30 days, and then at 90 days to find out how they've been trained and how well the job description is fits what they're actually doing at the organization.
You know, you only have one chance to make a good first impression. And so when somebody walks in and that's their first day at work, even though you may have met them for an interview, it's their first impression of your organization. And it's such a key moment to get them excited and get them involved and get them on board to what you're looking to do with them and make them part of that team, that sometimes it is unfortunate that it just doesn't go the way it should and that more time isn't spent on that process to get a long-term employee who is fully engaged and, you know, and able to maintain that talent.
I look at the early period of employment as going on a first date. And you've heard me talk about that before. You know, the psychology is very similar between going on a first date and being a new employee. You're excited. You might be a little scared. But for the most part, you're enthusiastic. And if you're not greeted with respect in either case, you're going to think about this as very differently, or you're going to think about this as, did I make the right choice going on this date, or is this the right employee for employment for me? And you'll be surprised that a very high percentage of people choose to leave their organization within the first 30 days. I think it's something like 30% of people choose to leave their organization within the 30 days. Now, they don't leave within the first 30 days, but they choose and they decide that this isn't the right organization for them.
Well, the amount of energy it takes to make up for that, the amount of energy it takes to recapture their attention and their enthusiasm, sometimes it can be, sometimes it can't be. But you're right, it's a very short window to make that happen. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you frustrated with medical care today? Does it make you angry that your doctor spends more time looking at the computer screen than at you? Does it seem like your doctor is out the door in 5 minutes? There is a better alternative. At Champy Family Practice, Dr. Michael Champy and his dedicated staff make taking care of patients their priority. They are a cash-friendly direct pay practice, which is the perfect option for people with no insurance, high deductibles, and health savings accounts. Unlike other practices, they post their prices in the office and even online. Get modern medical care delivered the old-fashioned way. For more information, call ChampiFamilyPractice.com. That's C-I-A-M-P-I. Or call 774-1222. Champy Family Practice is located at 380 Lincoln Street in South Portland. Champy Family Practice, continuing a tradition of medical excellence in Greater Portland since 1959.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we are talking with Don McPherson. He is the president of Modern Survey out in Minneapolis, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, Minnesota. I can't say it probably like you can, but it is Minnesota.
Home of the Timberwolves and home of the Twins.
Yeah, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. We have been talking a lot about employee engagement today. We've talked about a lot of the different methods of how to really get your employees engaged and know how it's like in the workplace that, you know, that you're there. Tell me a little bit about HR today. In other words, I know you've done a survey here, I believe it was released last month in January, that talks a little about the grade you would give HR in terms of this whole process. So what are some of the numbers you came up with?
Right. Well, this report, we'd actually gone out to 160 HR professionals last year and concluded the study last year and released it in January. And we looked at six different areas. We looked at hiring, onboarding, values and action, leadership and engagement, managing performance, and the exit process. And we found that what HR found important was not necessarily what they were doing. And so, you know, a really good example of that is that the hiring process. We found that 78% of HR professionals value the cultural fit of job candidates, but only 40% measure and monitor the effectiveness of their hiring process. And only 38% of HR professionals tell candidates to bring their best to work every day. So people are saying, you know, this is very important cultural fit, but they don't measure and monitor the hiring process, and they're not setting as a requirement that people bring their best to work every day. So there's a very significant disconnect between what's important and what's being done in the hiring process, and that should be alarming to a lot of HR professionals.
Tell me about the percentages of HR professionals that, you know, say they set expectations that employees should bring their best to work every day in the hiring process, but the ones that actually don't.
Well, as you know, when I'm speaking, I will often ask people to raise their hands and in response to the question, do you expect people to bring their best to work every day? And about 20% to 80% of hands will go up in the audience. And these are all HR professionals. I speak at SHRM chapters all around the country. 80% of people will raise their hands and say, yeah, we expect people to bring their best to work every day. And then a little bit later in the presentation, I'll ask them, okay, now how many of you set explicitly the expectation that at our organization, we expect people to bring their best to work every day? Now, I know our study said 38% of people say they do that, or 38% of HR professionals, but when I'm speaking, about 2% of hands go up. So it's abysmally low.
Why do you think that is? I mean, well, why do you think, I mean, really the question, I've heard you speak, and I've seen that question, and it always amazes me that that's not 100%. I'm sometimes taken aback. Like, you don't really expect people to come and give 100% every day? I mean, geez, you know, I'm not that old, and I remember being, you're going to give 110% every day. I mean, I'm just puzzled by it, I guess.
I think the reason why people don't all raise their hand when I ask them if they should is because I've told them that people are not. And there's a sense of realism with a lot of the people who keep their hands down. Why don't people set it as an expectation? I don't think it occurs to them. I don't think that there are probably two pieces to that. One is it doesn't occur to them to set that as an expectation. Two, a lot of people are just under pressure to get a warm body in a position because they're taking so much heat from a hiring manager. I need to get somebody in this position, without realizing that if they don't get the right person in that position, it's not going to be a month or 2 months of pain for that department or for that manager. It's going to be 2 or 3 years as they try to get that employee who they hired who wasn't the right fit to fit into the organization, or to try to fit that square peg in the round hole. So I think those are probably the two reasons why people aren't setting it as an expectation that, hey, here you need to bring your best to work. And it's something we do at Modern Survey. We ask new candidates, you know, can you bring your best to work every day? Because here we expect people to bring their best, and you're going to work with other high performers who expect that out of you. The wrong candidate leans back and is taken aback, and there's kind of a blank look on their face. The right candidate, they lean forward. They get excited by that. Tell me more. And so just based on that, you know, we're able to learn a lot about our candidates. And then we ask questions around what is, you know, bringing your best to work look like. You know, tell me some examples of when you had challenges or when there were people on your team who didn't bring their best to work, and what did you do about it?
You know, we're talking about hiring, retaining great talent. And I know one of the percentages you gave is sort of just 30% of organizations attempt to re-recruit high-performing or high-potential employees who have left the organization. Why so low?
I don't know. That is so disappointing. And again, I think it's one of those things where it doesn't occur to people. But in a lot of cases, employees are leaving your organization and to go to a place where the grass is greener. Well, guess what? The grass isn't greener. Not in all cases. And a lot of those high-performing and high-potential employees would be open to coming back to the previous organization. There's one client that we had that did an amazing job of this, and they were very intentional with it. You know, after a month, after 3 months, after 6 months, on a routine basis like that, they would check in with the employee and find out how their new employer was, and what their new situation was like, ask them if they'd be willing to come back, welcome them with open arms. They did a phenomenal job at that, but only 30% of organizations are doing this and attempting to do it. So even if they're attempting to do it, it doesn't mean they're doing it well or doing it right.
Do you think there's a little bit of pride there? You think there's some pride in you left and, you know that's your problem?
I think to a certain degree that might be part of it. But, you know, in business, you can't burn bridges. And,
right. You
know, we're taught that at a very early age. And so if you know there's somebody out there who can help your organization, who can be a part of your success, why wouldn't you bring them back? You know, especially if you if it was a positive, or you were grown up about it or mature about the exiting process, why wouldn't you bring them back? It just confounds me. And so for that reason, you know, the exit process, we actually gave HR a D for that one.
Ouch. Ouch. HR leaders, still keep listening. It's going to be okay. No, but I can certainly understand why, though. I can understand why, and I'm sure anyone listening will understand why that's the case. Yeah.
And, David, the thing is, I mean, we've just pointed out two things that HR professionals can change today. And that's, one is, in the interviewing process, set the expectation that employees bring their best to work every day. And two is re-recruit regrettable losses
right. In
your organization, your high performers or your high potentials who have left the organization, and make that part of your recruitment strategy. At a month, check in with that person. Find out if they're enjoying their new employment. At 3 months, check in again at 6 months. But it should be part of the recruitment process to bring these people back.
You know, one of the last, as we get ready to end the show here, one of the last things you talk about, and we talked a little about it in the segment prior, is onboarding. And you have some stats here that 91% of HR professionals say effectively onboarding is critical to the company's success. However, 56% have an effective process, 35% execute their process well, and only 26% measure or monitor the program effectiveness. Those seem really low numbers.
They are very low, and one of the very shocking things is we asked about leadership development and managing performance, engagement, and hiring, and we asked which of these things is important to your organization's success. And effective onboarding was the number one thing over effective leadership, over managing performance. It shocked me. Now, it was the highest by about 3 to 5 percentage points, but it was the highest nonetheless. And when we looked at the way people measured and monitored it, at 26%, so only 26% are measuring and monitoring their onboarding effectiveness, it was by far the lowest. So many organizations are effectively measuring performance and measuring engagement, but the number one thing, effective onboarding, in terms of company success, was the thing that they measured and monitored the least. And that's one of the reasons why we created a solution to do this for our clients and for organizations. It's so critical to the organization's success, because when people aren't onboarded effectively, you have a very high chance of losing them. Their teammates get frustrated because they're less engaged than they should be. Maybe you're not training them effectively, so they're not being able to perform at the level they should be. So this is one of the things that HR and organizations can change very quickly by putting a measurement process in place.
So if somebody wants to learn more, somebody wants to, you know, get in touch with you or your organization, what's the website? What's the phone number? Give them some good information to get a hold of you. And certainly they can go to the HRPowerHour.com and download this information after the show, and or your link will be there to connect with you. But where else can they get you?
They can get all sorts of research and access to me and access to the organization at modernsurvey.com. And they can also call. Our telephone number is 612-399-3837. And they can email me at dmacpherson, that's MacPherson, at modernsurvey.com. And if they're inclined to call toll free, that's 866-876-8242.
Well, Don, I appreciate you coming back on the show to really give an in-depth look at the survey process, Modern Surveys process, and in getting employees engaged and presenting really a very positive case as to why organizations should take this very seriously and do it the right way. So I thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you so much, David, for having me, and good luck to everyone out there in 2013 as we kick off our second month.
Absolutely. And now the HR tip of the week. Here's an example of what hiring managers really don't want to see on a resume. A candidate specified that her resume was set up to be sung in the tune of the Brady Bunch. Candidate resume was decorated with pink rabbits. Candidate applied for an accounting job and said he was detailed-oriented, only the word detailed was spelled D-E-E-T-A-I-L-E-D. Candidate's cover letter included the term L-O-L. These are examples of what would not impress a hiring manager. Think about what you write, because it matters. And that's your HR Tip of the Week. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 2 p.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.